Good afternoon. My name is Rashid Qureshi. I'm a senior program manager with Link. Is it okay? Everybody can hear me fine? Okay. I'll be going through the feature sets in Link 2013. It's a broad overview covering a lot of features that are part of Link 2013. It's a level 200 kind of presentation, so I will point to a specific deep dive presentation that'll talk more deeper into some of the feature areas that I'll be talking about. Feel free to answer any clarification question during the presentation. I plan to have the presentation done within an hour. There's a demo as well in the presentation. And then at the end, we can have a Q&A for 15 minutes, but you can ask any questions during the presentation as well if something is not clear. So Link 2013, there are core strengths of the server, which is providing a unified experience across different types of modalities, video, voice, IM, presence, and different set of scenarios, conferencing scenario, P2P scenario. So it enables all those unified experiences through the power of software without requiring any specialized hardware to be configured in your environment. So there is this cost benefit associated with Link, providing enterprise-grade voice, providing all the feature-rich set of scenarios. And at the same time, it also provides a single management interface to manage, to deploy, to configure Link by the IT pro admins. The third aspect of Link 2013 is to have the cloud flexibility to leverage the Link online system that is deployed and managed by Microsoft. So you can have your on-prem deployment, but you can still leverage the Link online feature sets that are available and take advantage of both the online space and as well as your on-prem deployment. So combining the benefits of both environment in your organization. I'll talk more about the online and the different ways of deploying Link in different configuration. Before I move further, how many of you, by show of hands, have actually Link 2013 deployed or planning to deploy Link 2013? So quite a few people, and that's a huge improvement from last year, so congratulations. And people who are still thinking about deploying Link 2013, I hope that I provide you enough information to move into that direction. So just to summarize what I've said so far is Link 2013 gives you the control, puts you in control, provides you the feature set to enable voicing and other solution within your enterprise organization, and as well as provide you the capability to manage Link effectively in your organization. There are several deployment choices, as I was mentioning earlier. You have on-prem deployment where you have your set of servers, you control them, you deploy them within your organization. Then you have the Link online, which is in the cloud deployment. And there is this third option of hybrid, which is basically taking your on-prem deployment and using the Link online subscription and taking benefit of both the environment. So a little bit more on the Link on-prem, like why would you like to deploy an on-prem deployment? It's essentially to leverage your existing investments and infrastructure that you have within your enterprise organization. It provides you the greatest flexibility where you control the configuration, the deployment, and scale of Link within your organization, and it also allows you to leverage your existing PBX infrastructure, third-party PSTN partnerships that you have to integrate with your Link infrastructure. So for those set of scenarios, you have Link on-prem deployment. With the Link on-prem deployment, it will work with Exchange and SharePoint in the online, so you don't have to have those workloads also deployed on on-prem. So it would be able to coexist with some of the other workloads for Office if your enterprise plans to use those workloads as well. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Link Online, which basically a subscription-based model. So you take advantage of the availability and reliability assurance provided by Link Online. It reduces the administrative cost in a sense that you have the subscription model and you use Link Online for a set of users that would be using the IM conferencing and presence functionality in Link Online. It would be able to sync your current enterprise directory into Link Online, so you'd be able to see the presence and those set of information that are important from the Link scenario perspective. The deployment of Link client is simplified using the click-to-run technology, where the client is a stream to the endpoints. So you don't have to actually go and deploy the clients or install the clients on each of the endpoints. It's instantaneous, where you can start using Link as soon as you have enabled a subscription for a user. Any questions so far on both the model? Sorry? The click-to-run, it plays with any of the distribution model that you have. You can use the distribution model to pass the payload for click-to-run. It streams the bits directly onto the endpoint, and you would be able to start running the click-to-run applications that are deployed in that fashion. So it essentially provides an isolation, a virtualized kind of a deployment model, and it can run side-by-side with any of your existing, let's say you have Link 2010 deployed. The click-to-run Link 2013 would be able to run side-by-side without interfering with Link 2010. Sorry, pardon me? I'm not sure about that. I can verify that with you after the presentation.
You may have to repeat the questions for the recording. Yeah.
There is this third mode, which is the hybrid mode of deployment, where you have both Link on-prem and Link online deployment or subscription. The typical reason why you want to go with this hybrid model is if you have a group of users within your organization that really doesn't have any requirement for PSTN connectivity, or they use your corporate PSTN lines, you can have those users onto the online, Link online, and they can use the IM conferencing and all the other functionality, and they have their own cell phone for making PSTN voice call. So in those cases, you have this kind of a hybrid mode where you can reduce the load on your on-prem and move some of these users into the online and migrate those users into the online space in a gradual fashion. So in a nutshell, there's a lot of features included with Link 2013, the presence and instant messaging scenarios, enterprise voice, persistent chat functionality is included within Link Online. All of these features are provided in an integrated fashion to the user. So from the same client, you can exercise these scenarios without having to work with different kind of user interfaces to enable those scenarios. I will talk through these features and highlight the key scenarios that are, or key feature sets in each of these areas that have been enabled in Link 2013. So for the enterprise voice, it provides enterprise-grade voice functionality. There's a bunch of features that have been added to support enterprise voice in Link 2013. There are a few new features since we have the last conference last year, which is the location-based routing and the support for multi-factor auth. If I go through this list quickly, the inter-trunk routing functionality is enabled in Link 2013. It essentially allows an organization to have their existing infrastructure, like PBX infrastructure, to coexist with Link. So you can have Link end users move to Link, but still have PBX users, and Link would be able to interop and route calls to those PBX endpoints. So both those set of users can coexist in the same environment, and you can gradually remove the PBX systems and replace it with Link throughout the organization. So it enables this kind of a bridging stage for you to roll out Link in a staged fashion in the organization. The M is to N trunk routing is an evolution from in 2007 R2. There used to be one-to-one mapping of mediation server and PSTN gateway. It improved in 2010 Link with 1:N mapping of mediation server to gateway, and with 2013, you can now have a single PSTN gateway, can have trunks with multiple mediation servers. So it provides more flexibility in terms of managing the resources and managing how you distribute load across mediation server and the PSTN gateway. The caller ID translation, Link 2013, uses E.164 format for standard format for numbers. But if within your organization you have separate rules, like for instance, just display the extension number of the user, Link provides this caller ID translation into the other format so that it can interplay with PSTN gateway, or not the PSTN, but other gateways that you have in your system and endpoints that you have in your system. Unassigned number range handling is a functionality where within an organization, if you have a set of numbers that are currently not assigned to any endpoint, it will be routed to an auto attendant service, which will announce that this number is not assigned to any user. So it gives more appropriate feedback to the user who's trying to use certain numbers that are not currently assigned to any endpoint. The E911 improvements provide location-based functionality. So when an emergency call is placed within an organization, it carries the location information, and it also has the capability to dispatch the E911 call to the local within your organization, the security desk, for instance, apart from dispatching it to the 911 provider, the local 911 provider. So the key here is that the first responder, not just the local 911 dispatcher would be able to find out what happened, but also your local security desk would know what happened. They would have the detailed location information of where the call has been placed, so they can react to it more quickly and appropriately in a timely fashion. There is a new conference PSTN dial-out policies. So if in an organization you have users that don't have PSTN dial-out EV policies assigned, but in certain cases, if there is a set of users who are in conferences and they need to reach out to subject matter experts, you can assign the PSTN dial-out policy to those users. So even though they don't have the EV policy assigned, they would still be able to make a PSTN call-out to invite subject matter experts, for instance, in the meeting to discuss any issue during the conference. So it's only enabled during that conference where this user is engaged. There is a new role which is called the response group manager roles. The response groups are typically used to group a bunch of experts or a bunch of users in a dedicated group, and the call has been placed on that response group, and all those folks be able to receive that call and respond to that call. But in scenarios where you have a lot of response groups in your organization, to configure and to manage those response groups, you have to cut an IT admin ticket so they can go and respond to respond to that request. With the manager role, you can assign this responsibility or delegate this responsibility to a set of users who can then go and manage those response groups independently without having to go to the IT admin to service those requests every time there is a need to make any changes to the response groups. The call forwarding and simulring functionality has been enhanced. New options have been added. For example, the delegates would now be able to register their mobile endpoints for simulring as well. So this gives them the flexibility not to be tied to a desk all the time in order to receive phone call that has been placed for their bosses, so they will be able to receive those calls on their cell phone. So that's an advantage and helps mobilizing the users. The voicemail escape is a scenario where you have multiple endpoints, and I just mentioned that the admin can have a cell phone registered as the endpoint. But if that cell phone, let's say that it's not in coverage, and if Link decides to fork these calls to all these endpoints, since the cell phone is not in coverage, it'll automatically go to the voicemail. And if it does so, the Link will stop ringing all the endpoints. So the user won't get the opportunity to receive that call on any other endpoint, even though that user has the other endpoints available. Like he's sitting on a desktop somewhere, and the phone is there, the cell phone is there, but it happens that it's out of coverage. With voicemail escape, Link would detect this scenario and would still allow other endpoints to ring. So the user will get the opportunity to pick up that call on any other endpoint. If the user didn't answer that call, then it'll go into the Link voicemail in that scenario, so you'll be able to pick or find out what happened for that particular voice. The HADR is an important area in 2013. Both HA functionality and DR functionality works nicely with the enterprise voice scenario, where you can have a server going down where the user is registered without impacting the user, so an IT admin can go and service and apply patches to the server without causing any disruption on P2P session. And also you can have the entire site, for instance, going down. If you have multiple sites, for instance, paired up, the user won't be impacted in that scenario. The DR aspect would handle those scenarios as well without impacting the P2P sessions. Now coming to this two new things that I mentioned, the location-based routing. So this is a compliance feature. So in regions where they have strict PSTN regulatory requirements where you cannot bypass TN toll PSTN toll charges, this policy or this functionality enable Link to be deployed in those regions by enabling location-based routing. So when location-based routing is enabled, Link would ensure that it will only use VoIP connectivity in a P2P session or in a conferencing session if it's not violating any of the PSTN toll charges in that region. So that allows companies or organizations that are in that kind of a heavy PSTN regulatory requirement boundaries to still go and deploy Link while satisfying all the PSTN requirements. And to support compliance and security, the two-factor auth has been added into Link Client. So that makes it more compliant. Any questions for this? Yep. Just selective. So the question is that can this be set to a selective response groups, not just to all response groups? I think it's either you have it or not at this moment. So if this particular policy is assigned, you would have this rights to go and manage the response groups. Okay. So persistent chat, I mentioned earlier, this is another functionality that has been enhanced in Link 2013. The main enhancement is providing the same experience through the Link client through which you would be able to access persistent chat functionality. And it's important in organizations like financial services organization and other organizations that require this information of all the chats that happen in a particular thread to be persisted in some place. So they continue to have this kind of a record available. So you'll be able to participate in those persistent chat rooms using the existing Link client. So from the user usability perspective, there is no separate client to be used. You can still exercise its functionality through the Link client. And from the server deployment perspective, the resiliency aspect has been improved. Again, from the HADR perspective, the enhancements are incorporated in there, so there is no loss of data. Disaster recovery is provided and high availability functionality has been provided. There is a separate talk, I think this happened this morning, so you may be able to get the video of this talk if you're interested in persistent chat functionality. Mustafa Nuruddin, he provided a talk on taking advantage of persistent chat and Link to go in more deep into that in that feature. So video conferencing, in the keynote today, as Gurdeep would mention, that having the video conferencing is always provides enriching experience for the users when they communicate using video rather than just voice or IM. And Link made certain improvements in 2013, providing high definition video streaming capability. On the Link line, if you see here, they have six live stream of users in the gallery view. So you can see their participation in the meeting and their video live stream in the meeting. So those six views are basically the people who are most contributing in the meeting, the people who are mostly talking in the meeting. They will be shown in the top six window in the gallery view, and the rest of the seatings would be shown for all the other participants in the meeting. You can still lock a particular view or a particular session or particular view on a user, and you can see that user's stream in that meeting, regardless of whether they're talking or not. So you can basically lock on a particular user or pin a particular contact and see that stream. The smart cropping functionality is included with Link 2013, where if a user is moving from the camera, moving back from the camera, the smart cropping will take out the irrelevant kind of ambient surroundings and focus on the focus the view on the user so that the user is more prominent in the video stream. From the interop scenario for video conferencing and telepresence, there are new codecs being supported, which is H.264 and VC1 that enables video conferencing and telepresence scenario to interplay with other third-party gateways and work with Link server. Any questions here so far? Yep. Plan to support multicast? In
2013, no, but we are actually looking into a solution of providing multicast video in the near future.
After 2013.
Yeah, so we don't have a date yet, but definitely that's one of the features that we have a pretty good understanding of how it should work. It's just a matter of getting to the next level of detail and actually releasing it.
So we talked about enterprise voice, video conferencing. Both are the core strength of Link 2013. But there is more in terms of enhancing the reach of Link 2000 experience. And this is through the web conferencing. So enabling the Link experience of voice, of conferencing on multiple web platforms, be it IE, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, you can get the same experience using rich Link web app, or ELBA for short, and get the same kind of experience without having to have a dependency on the native client installed. There's also enhancements done in the OWA, which is the Outlook web app, from Exchange to schedule meetings through the OWA client itself, so you don't have to have a dependency on Outlook to go and create those meetings. You can do it through OWA client, so it's completely through web-based. You can experience, you can enhance those experience or experience the Link scenarios through the web applications. And then, again, going into the other dimension of mobile and reaching out into the mobile space and enhancing or providing those experiences in mobile. In the last 2013 conference, we talked about a few set of scenarios that are being enabled on mobile. We built on top of that, so Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, they're all the mobile platform that Link covers. And there are a set of scenarios that have been enhanced on those platforms, which includes the VoIP, data collab, app sharing, contact management through the mobile client, as well as been added, and call transfer. So if you're on a mobile device, you are able to transfer your call on your desktop endpoint using the mobile client. For compliance and security, there is cert-based auth and passive auth added onto the Link client as well. So that gives further, satisfies other set of compliance requirement for you to start using and deploying Link client within your organization. There's also a talk on what's new with Link mobile client that goes in more detail on the set of functionality introduced in Link mobile client. Any questions on that? Yeah.
About actually just managing the client itself, turning it off.
Managing the client itself, in a sense, turning off mobiles. Sorry? The
managing the device itself.
So it's the life cycle of how to manage, how to deploy, how to update patches. So is there any?
Yeah. So we have a couple of things around that. One is, the client itself is given through the app stores of individual app stores from Apple, Microsoft, and Android. But apart from that, from the Link server side, you can have a client version filter, so you can restrict the version of clients that you want to connect to your Link server. And there are also a couple of mobile-specific settings that you can do it on the server so that you can say, hey, this mobile clients can never access your Link server outside of your corporate network. So there are mobile-specific settings that you can apply on your Link server to actually restrict or behave in certain way that you want mobile clients to behave. But the installation itself happens through the app stores of individual platforms.
How about actually turning it off?
Yeah, you can.
So there's a policy that you can enable on the server that'll turn off
all mobile devices.
Yeah, all mobile devices.
Even in erasing data?
Sorry, say that again?
Let's say erasing data, we could erase, say, the data on the device.
I don't think we support that, but that's a good question for the subsequent session for the mobile team. So, but I'm not sure if it's supported today.
Yeah, so that's basically, for each of the phones, they provide as a native kind of functionality to erase everything on that phone. So it's not kind of selective. It's either all or nothing kind of a thing.
Or some.
Yeah. So we also have one more setting where you can say, hey, this user, if a particular user's mobile phone has been lost and if he reports it, you can say, hey, this user cannot log into mobile phone anymore. So you can turn off mobile per user as well.
Yep.
By user. So a user can log in through desktop and other clients, but not through his mobile.
So what happens when they get a new phone?
Yeah. I'm not sure about whether we have device-specific settings, so that's something that I need to confirm.
Yeah. So there are certain features that are available in a sense that you have device wipeout, so you can do that. And as Ganesh mentioned, there is selective functionality that you can enable to turn off a user accessing the mobile functionality, or you can completely disable mobile organization-wide so nobody would be able to use mobile. So those are the controls that are available today. So Ganesh, he's been standing here quietly. Let me introduce him. he's deeply involved in the mobile and web space. There's a demo that he will talk about, and Prashant and Tony will help in this demo to demonstrate the capability of web and the mobile space.
You want to switch to 8?
Yeah, let me switch the...
Hey, I'm Ganesh. I just want to get a sense of how many people have deployed the mobile solution part of Link 2013. About a half, I would guess. I don't know about you, but I'm super excited about our mobile and web strategy with Link Server. As Gudeep mentioned in today's keynote, it's going to be a universal communication. It's going to be web, mobile, not only mobile. It's going to be even to clients that you have never thought of. For example, one of my colleagues, he actually had a client based out of UCWA, which is a public web API that Link Server 2013 supports. He managed to write a client on Raspberry Pi, which is like a $35 computer. So pretty much once you understand the philosophy behind the web APIs, the sky's the limit. Having said that, I just want to show you a demo with a couple of mobile clients.
So we just want to show that the view that you are seeing here, this is my client that I'm joining a meeting.
Yeah, so basically we have a phone here. I have signed it on myself, my official account. My buddies Prashant and Tony here to help out with the demo. So I'm going to call Tony and see what he's up to. So I'm going to make a video call. It pretty much uses it's audio and video call. And you should see two-party video show up rightly. Yeah. So, hey Tony, thanks for joining. And I think there are a couple of good conferences, speeches going around this Link conference. Maybe we should attend a couple of those. Maybe we should include Prashant as well, who's sitting right here with his iPhone. I'm gonna invite him. This is what is going to happen here is that I'm going to make a two-party call. I made a two-party call with Tony. Once I invite Prashant, who is here, once I add Prashant, it actually escalates from a two-party call to a conference automatically without you saying anything about it. So conference escalation is one of the really latest features that we started supporting in mobile devices. And more and more, if you notice, I think I need. The more and more you see, the mobile feature set is getting closer to what we support on desktop, and it's not going to take, as you guess, it's not going to take long where mobile client is on parity with the feature set that we support with desktop. And one of the things I just want to add to this one is you can actually go to the participants view where we show the rich set of roster features. You can see yourself and all the attendees in a participants. Not only that, you can get to see their presence, you can get to see their photos, all the modalities they are participating in. For example, in this we have audio and video. So all the three participants are showing audio and video. If you add IM, and there's also app sharing supported, so you see those icons light up as well. While I was talking, Tony, can you share something so that I can show the app sharing feature in mobile? So I get a notification saying that Tony has started presentation. So if I click on that, I should in a minute I should see the app sharing that Tony is doing. Yes, so it is getting loaded. And yes. So
now,
yes.
You guys saw my cool photo. I just wanted to show the iPhone experience as well.
Yeah. You need to focus. You need to.
Right now. Is it visible?
Yeah.
So basically, the iPhone and the Windows Phone will have similar set of experiences across. Both support application sharing, viewing, and the UI culture that you see across the different devices would be the same link experience that you see with the Metro app or the desktop app. And don't judge me for using an iPhone. It's because of people like me that we can have such a rich ecosystem with the different OS.
Thanks, Prashant. So all along, I've been actually demoing this feature from a web client joined to a conference using the same set of APIs that the mobile clients have been using. So this is a client, a web client that can join to a conference, and you see exactly a similar set of features that is supported in mobile clients as well, where you see a rich set of participant information like title, display name, and the modalities that are joined to, and you have the full view video show up here as well, and you have individual modalities that you can add, like application sharing, video, and you can have more participant actions as well. That's the demo I had.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So this experience is as if the native experience that you get from the link line, this is available through the web interface, and it's same on IE, web, and,
IE
Chrome, and Firefox, and Safari.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you, Ganesh. So there is this another session at 3:45.
You need to change the...
Actually, not AM, it should be PM.
You need to change it. Back to one.
So ignore the AM, PM. But there's a presentation here that goes in more detail about the Ting Mobile client. Are you covering in that as well?
Not today.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure. Good question. For a web client, typically, if you don't do any kind of audio or video, you don't need to install anything. It just runs from the browser. But if you need to do audio and video, there's a small plugin, ActiveX plugin, that will you'll get prompted if you're joining the audio modality. It will be prompting for you to install an ActiveX plugin. So if you just install, that should be it.
Any plans for providing
a bridge to the RDP? Yeah, that's a good question, and I've been hearing that question from a lot of people. So we are, I don't know if you attended a couple of other sessions, we are working closely towards with the WebRTC team inside Microsoft and outside of Microsoft as well. We are thinking about coming up with a solution for addressing the WebRTC based clients. So soon you will see something related to that. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Any other questions for me before Rashid takes over? Thanks.
Right. Thank you, Ganesh. So getting into the different topologies, the link topology that you can deploy in an organization. So starting with the single server topology, this is the simplest way of deploying and enabling link, preferable for a small organization or if you're on a pilot link within your organization. So it's a standardization box that you deploy. That server enables all the scenario that that we talked about, from enterprise voice to web conferencing to mobile to all the conferencing features. You can also have some level of HA resiliency added here by deploying another standardization box and pairing the two boxes together. So that gives you some level of HA resiliency. Now, scaling it further, if you have a medium to large organization where you have lots of users within the organization, the preferred model of deployment is using the Enterprise Edition server pools, where you have front-end servers enabling all the experience that we have on Link. And then you have a back-end server that is there to replicate or to make a backup of all the states that are present on the Link front-end servers, just in case if all the servers within a pool goes down, you'll still be able to rehydrate that state using the backup service. The high availability is enabled in the Link server pool, where you have the state within a pool is replicated across all the servers within the pool. So if one machine goes down, the other servers within the pool would be able to pick up the workload and continue with the scenario. The DR aspect I'll talk about more, where you can mirror, using the backup server, you can mirror your state to another site, to another pool. So if the entire site goes down, you'll be able to still recover the workload on the other pools in the other on the other site. The backend database can also be used to co-locate other set of scenario that you want to enable within your organization, like QAE or the quality-based information that you want to store. The monitoring functionality and pchat database can also be co-located on the backend database. For the organization that have multiple sites, you can have the same kind of deployment model in multiple sites where you have enterprise edition server pools deployed in primary and other sites to enable remote access and to remote access and federation. You can deploy edge servers in those sites that would open up federation with other organization and as well as open up remote access to your enterprise environment. As I mentioned, that you can pair up your sites or pools in those two sites. So if one site goes down, the other site would be able to take over the workload. So that's the DR aspect of it. And the backend server that I mentioned is used to replicate a state from one site to the other site. So you have high availability within a site using the functionality of replicating the state within the pool, and then you have disaster recovery utilizing the backend database to replicate the state across sites. So far we talked about a bunch of roles, but to really think about link deployment, there are three set of roles. There is this front end, which runs all the workloads. So you have the SIP registrar functionality provided by the front end. You have mobile web access, all of that functionality provided by front end. Then there is the SQL backend that enables mirroring and storing the state present on the front end server. And then you have the edge server that enables remote access and federation with other organizations. So those are the three core roles to enable link within an organization. And then on top of that, you can add other functionality like persistent chat server. So if you deploy persistent chat, this will give you the capability or enable the persistent chat functionality. There is this monitoring database that you can add, so you can monitor the quality of voice within your organization. By deploying Exchange, you get functionality like voicemail. You can use Exchange for that. The system center, you can use it to monitor the health of Link server within your organization. And then using SharePoint WAC would give you the capability of sharing presentation, PowerPoint deck in a more rich fashion, in a sense that if you have, let's say, embedded video within your within your PowerPoint, you can use the SharePoint WAC server to stream those content as well in your conference. So the difference from 2010 and 2013, one big way of making it a more highly scalable 2013 is to do a bit of a loose coupling between the backend and the front end servers. In 2010, all the dynamic state and static state used to be persisted in the backend, and that drives the limit in terms of how many servers that you can have in a pool because of the high throughput that you would need on the backend server for all the dynamic state that you need to access. With 2013, the dynamic state is now moved into the front-end server, so all the front-end servers maintain a portion of the state of your entire set of users, whereas the back-end server is more about backing up that dynamic state at a regular interval so you have that state captured in one place. But with this loose coupling, you can add more servers in a pool, so now you can go up to 12 servers within a pool. For the back-end server, if it is replicating a state to other sites, there are several ways of enabling it. The mirroring options was enabled some time back, but now clustering and always-on functionality has also been enabled for the SQL backend replication. Any questions so far? So for the HADR, the recovery scenario that we talked about, that you have two sites, you have a pool deployed in one site with front-end servers running in an HA fashion, so if one server within that pool goes down, it would be able to recover, or the other server would be able to recover because the state is replicated on at least two servers within a pool. And then you use the back-end database to replicate the state of the paired pools in two sites. So if the entire pool goes down, the state is replicated to the other site and in the other pool. So you'll be able to transfer that workload to the other pool. There is also a more detailed talk on high availability and disaster recovery that will go in more detail and go through the command lets that you can use and how the IT admin is able to exercise those HA scenario, how to fail over, fail back. All those options that, are being provided through a set of command lets that the user can use. To further optimize the cost savings and reduce the cost of deploying Link and managing Link, there is support for virtualizing both the Link server as well as virtualizing the Link client. So the server virtualization, you can use any of the SVBP hypervisor to virtualize either standard edition server, the roles that we talked about for the enterprise edition, which means the front end server, the back end, the edge servers. That can all be virtualized and enable the Link functionality in a virtualized environment. And there is also a separate, more in-depth discussion on virtualizing Link Server 2013 tomorrow on to give you more details on that. And then there is this virtualization of Link clients. So you can have a remote desktop, a virtual desktop running Link client, and you can use your thin client or other PCs to connect to that remote desktop and use the Link client that is being virtualized on that desktop environment. You need a VDI plugin that will enable to redirect the audio video to your thin client, and then from that thin client, you'd be able to experience the whole Link experience without having to deploy Link on all the machines that you have in your environment. So that gives another flexibility on and managing the cost of rolling out Link client in your organization. So this is basically a system on a chip based client like HP clients that are out there. Only Microsoft here. So compliance. There's a lot of work done in the compliance story, providing an integrated tool to set compliance policy, the tool to retrieve compliance data, not just for Link, but if you're using other Microsoft workload like Exchange, SharePoint, you'd be able to leverage this tool to access this information and set the compliance policy using that tool. So the biggest change here is that there's one archiving store in Link 2013. So from the administration perspective, you don't have to manage multiple stores for archiving if you have Exchange or if you have Link. It's all consolidated using Exchange. There's one archiving store. It uses the tool to set the policy for compliance and the context store. It leverages Exchange's database for storing all the contact information. So from the unified compliance and context store perspective, if you look into the box on the left-hand side, it shows that you have Exchange server within your organization. It uses the Exchange database to store all the contact information. And from the Link server, as well as the client talks directly to the Exchange 2000 server to persist information and retrieve information for contact. On the right-hand side, the top right box, it shows that there is a unified e-discovery tool which you can use to set compliance policy, and you can use this tool to actually retrieve information. It uses the Exchange web service APIs to call into Exchange and store information and retrieve information from Exchange. So it tries to simplify the whole compliance and archiving story in Link 2013 and work better with other workloads if you're using Office workloads like Exchange and SharePoint within your organization. So enabling the connected scenario, enabling Federation, remote access, and Skype, as I talked a couple of times, that there is this role, which is the edge role. If you have this edge role deployed, it provides accessibility for the remote users. You are able to use the edge server to enable Federation with other organization, as well as you have a Skype interconnectivity, so audio video connectivity through Skype in with Link users. Those are the functionality that would be enabled through this edge server and with the other parties and third parties that are involved. There's also a talk on Link Skype connectivity V2. Which talks about a more in terms of how the Link Skype connectivity can be enabled. Session border control. Yeah, I mean, so it basically gives you this set of functionality where you can manage and implement the policies of what other network that you want to federate with and allow access through that edge in a more controlled fashion. Yes, it's a Microsoft edge. No.
Yeah, so one good thing about the edge server is that it is the same edge server which is for both SIP, HTTP, and any other kind of traffic, instead of having to buy different appliances for different kind of traffic.
So those are the set of functionality that are part of the edge role. So that's why it's made into a separate role to implement those set of specific functionality and take care of the DDoS scenario and other scenarios that would be otherwise be vulnerable if you don't have edge server deployed. And the recommendation is like in the next slide, you would see the director role, but director role is more of now obsolete in Link 2013 with the introduction of edge role. But still, you can still deploy edge role to the director role to give you better protection around DDoS and other threats. But it's no longer really needed in your topology. All right. So migration. So path to Link 2013. This is a really high level overview of scenarios where you can migrate. The key thing to note here is that. If you're migrating to Link 2013, you can roll out the Link client, the Link 2013 client. It would interop with Link 2010 server. So that's one of the key things if you're planning to roll out. Or you can start with the back-end server deployment, the front-end server deployment. It would play nicely with other server infrastructure that you have, the Link 2010 server infrastructure. So it can live side by side. So one of the patterns that you can use here we are showing that you have Federation in your old deployment, or we call it legacy here, and you have set up with Federation and remote access. The first step is that you deploy a pilot pool, you add a bunch of servers, And as you add those servers, you update your directory roles to basically point to those new servers that you have added, move a bunch of users, stabilize those users. Since the directory role is now pointing to this new server as well, the traffic would be routed for those new users that have been moved to this new pool. And in a gradual way, you add layers on top of that server and start moving the functionality. So you add director role, the new director role, the new edge role. You change the rules so the remote access would now be through this new edge role that you have added, and the traffic would flow on your new deployment. And as things are stabilizing, you move your federation to the new edge server. And from there on, the new silo would essentially becomes more and more active, would be taking in real traffic. And at that point, you start moving all the remaining users to that new server, and decommission the old server and repurpose those old machines. All right, so questions and comments. I'll just put this slide here. There are a bunch of other sessions that I thought that would be interesting to attend that'll go in more deeper in some of the functionalities that we talked about. Among other sessions that would be covered during this presentation. If there are any questions, Ganesh and I have. Not at this moment. What we have, as I mentioned, that in the video conferencing, you have this Edge.264 codec and VC1 codec that can interoperate with other gateways, the third-party gateways. But it would not be able to directly use the Cisco conferencing system directly. There is some work needed to enable that, and that's some of the things that we are looking into.
Yeah, and another thing is we also have a platform story. So if you want to actually interop with a specific third-party video conferencing solution, you can think about how you can leverage our platform to build a gateway as well. Have any details about when your talk is? 8:30.
So the question is that when you are using the online subscription, from the EULA perspective, how would you handle the capacity growth into the online space? So it's pretty simple in a sense that you buy the seats that you want to enable in Link Online. So you basically get the subscription and you buy that many seats, and you would be throttled on the number of seats that you've been provisioned. And then there's the same kind of restrictions that apply in terms of meeting sizes. That how many people meeting at most that you can schedule, so you cannot have more than 250 people meeting if you're scheduling those meetings. So those are the restrictions that are there. But the SLA that Link Online provides is the availability SLA, and if those SLAs are not met, then there is this recourse based on the EULA that it'll be refunded in terms of if the availability or the reliability requirement goes down. So there is this risk transfer to the Link Online in terms of if any of those eventualities happen in the Link Online space.
Yep.
The Link mobile plan, what data is stored on mobile devices, if any? We're concerned about compliance data. We might be on all mobile devices. Mm-hmm. What is the computer identification and security device data, or is nothing
Yeah, so the couple of the question is what is actually stored on the mobile client. There are a couple of things to note. One is we've just enabled two-factor auth. So based on that, there is no storage of any kind of passwords on the mobile client itself. That's a new feature that we added. So you have a certificate that's stored on the mobile client. Apart from that, when you start out, nothing is actually stored on the mobile client. All the data it is accessing from the server. Once it accesses the data from the server, it actually caches the data for some amount of time. And roughly, the amount of time varies from 5 minutes to all the way up to like 3 or 4 days. But once you sign out, all the data that has been associated with that particular instance is gone. Nothing is stored outside of that one. Only things that are stored are user-specific settings. Outside, after you log out, the only things that are still cached is the user-specific settings. Say you want a VoIP call only on Wi-Fi if you want to reduce your 3G minutes. So there are specific settings that you can have your client enable. So those are the only things that are stored. Apart from that, the actual data itself will be gone after you sign up.
Yep. So the out of the box, in a sense, that you have to do some configuration to open a certain port. So there is no licensing requirement as such that I'm aware of, but I can check on particularly with Yahoo, but there's no licensing requirement with Skype, at least. But for Yahoo, I need to check on that. The question is the multicast support. What is the pain point in terms of? Okay.
Yeah, you can actually use the mic here if you want to comment on how much multicast video is a pain point for you.
And as I think for the multicast scenario, like when we are talking about Link Online itself, that has to be one of the things that we are looking into, like in a sense how to do it more efficiently. Once the architectural elements have been sorted out, it would be enabled in the on-prem as well. But those are the things that we are looking into at this point in time. All right, thank you folks for joining in. Thanks a lot.